Welcome back to Woke at Work Season 2. So excited, I know, to be back at it. And really super excited about our guest today. We are talking about something that's so important. We are talking all things COVID-19 vaccine. I know there's a lot of anxiety in Black and Brown communities about this, rightfully so. And so our guest today is my really good friend, one of my best friends in the entire world. I have known this girl since I was out spotting in these streets back in college. She is Dr. Andrea.
In the streets, real right.
Yes, that's a stretch. Okay, I wasn't spotting. But I was out there getting my little plug on. Okay, but I call her Cree, Dr. Cree. I said Trimble because that is stuck in my mind. But she's married now. Okay, been married. Okay. So it is Dr. Andrea Johnson. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And we are talking with her today. Listen, this girl is everything. Okay. Not only is she a family physician, she is a wife, she is a mother, she is an author, she is an entrepreneur, she is a Spelman College graduate. And, you know, those are all the things I can say about her, but let me read you a real, real official bio, girl, so they know who they talking to, who they listening to, what we working with. Okay. Okay. So Dr. Cree is a board certified family medicine physician. She is an international public speaker. Okay, get that right. She's a life coach and, like I said, a wife and a mother to the cutest, spunkiest little Zoe. She is in the 2020 class of the Birmingham Business Journal's top 40 under 40. Cree, you still under 40?
Yes, I don't turn 40 until April.
April.
Look at them, baby. Look at the bangers.
Yes. Top 40, under 40. I'm still 40, under 42. Okay, not for much longer. I'll be there in July.
Okay, crew. Okay. Shout out to
yeah.
In 2017, she earned the titles of B Metro Magazine Top Doctors in Medicine, B Metro Magazine Top Women in Medicine, and Trademark Women of Distinction Honors for her dedication to answering questions about common medical conditions and bringing awareness to the importance of healthy lifestyles. She is the medical director of the Living Well Prep Clinic, where she is helping to combat HIV one prevention case at a time. Dr. Cree resides in Trussville, Alabama, and y'all gonna hear that in my girl's accent, with her husband and daughter. Like I said before, she's a graduate of Spelman College and earned her doctorate of medicine from Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences, and completed her residency at St. Vincent's Eats Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. She loves G-O-D, okay, God, traveling, and all things Southern. Yes.
Yes.
Love it. That is real, real about my girl, Dr. Cree. And welcome to the show, Cree.
Thank you for having me, Ray and Blanca. I mean, I feel so honored to be on your platform today trying to educate the people. So thank you for having me.
Yes.
Thank you for blessing us with all your wisdom and your presence. And sorry, we're not international.
You got to do what you got to do. Okay. It's okay.
International block. I think we got some people like it. No,
they international. I'm saying we individually are not international.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Cree, I said all those things about you, but you tell the listeners how you define yourself. What are the identity markers that matter to you, that you stand on from day to day? What should the people know about you?
So they should know, guys, that I am Dr. Cree. I'm a board certified family medicine physician by day, but by night I have a strong love for working women. And working women and those of us who are stretched from, you know, pen to pen, doing all things for everyone. So I identify with being a wife, being a mother, being God's daughter, and being the one that is here to be the hands and feet of Jesus. So that's kind of how I identify myself.
Okay, sis. Yes.
Can I ask an early question? Yeah. How many hours are in your day? Because regular people have 24, but you seem to have another set of hours that we don't have.
Nope, I don't. I have the same 24, but I delegate like a beast. I believe in delegating. That's the secret sauce right there.
Oh,
we're going to have to get to that secret sauce.
We're going to have to talk about that, because that if I could identify one of my major weaknesses in managing all the things that I manage, it's delegation. I do not delegate well at all. So, yes, as a matter of fact, let's just start there.
Who are you telling to do things and how? Who should we be telling to do things for us?
So it depends. I think time is our greatest commodity. You know, if time is so important to me and I want to spend my time doing the things that I want to do, I don't like cleaning the house, so I can find somebody to help me do that, right? Now, it took me a lot of people to go through. I mean, I even at one point had a 6-foot man that was cleaning my house. But, you know, you just move around until you find who you can,
Everybody out here, you know, we're gonna start delegating our partners and spouses and stuff. So we just trying to figure out.
Like Dr. Cree said that I could tell you to clean up.
Like get to it, sir. But yeah, no. So I think that looking at my time, I don't like cleaning. I want to make sure I spend my time wisely. And for one season when I was really busy at work, we found a little old lady who liked to cook. And she was cooking. She still wanted to cook for several people, but it was just her and her family. So she made our food and they dropped it off. And so for a season, I had that. Now when that season went up, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to find another grandmama, another person that can help in that regard. But I would just say, you know, the key is trying people out, not being afraid to fire people when they don't work out. And then just trying them out and say, hey, I'll try you for a season. If this doesn't work, we'll be on to the next. So therefore, I'm not a big cleaner. I cook, you know, a couple of times a week, and then I let my family know what my time looks like. We look at their time, and then we say, hey, Friday's mommy's day, and they respect that. So we have these conversations. My daughter's 7, and she knows that it's okay that mommy has mommy time. I'm not being mad. I'm not in a bad place, but mommy needs her time just like you need your time. So if we can start delegating, having those conversations with our families, we would see that we would feel better, because they understand what we're doing. They see what you're doing. They see you with all those computers and all those arms that you don't have holding up everything. So give them the burden of helping you manage it all.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. I think you just freed a lot of women right there, honestly, because for so long, I think there's this narrative that like the ideal woman, the Proverbs 31 woman, if you will. And it's like, well, she did this and she did this and she did that. And there can be some guilt attached to having somebody come clean my house, having somebody cook the food, having somebody else even teach my children. You just made me realize that I just delegated the teaching of my children, right, to the public school that I'm paying all this money for. I was like, I'm homeschooled.
I like that you delegating teaching. I'm like, that's like a job, right? That's like God-given rights to go to school, you know, in this country.
But not for me. For me, I was like, oh, well, I can homeschool them. I'm a teacher. I'm an educator. I know what's best, yada, yada, yada. Let me do it during this time when they're home. And I finally was like, sis, hang that up. Like, you in a different place in life. Hang it up. They like Blanca said, that is a whole job that people get paid to do, and that my taxes fund. Let them go to school.
I think, Ray, what you said about the Proverbs 31 woman, we hear all of these things, but we forget she had workers. She had help. She did those things, but if you go back and read that scripture, you would see that she had workers, she had servants, she had people that she delegated things to, and she was, you know, highly sought out in her community. But girlfriend, she had help. So I salute you that you have delegated school. So you just freed up a lot of time for yourself. That's good.
Yeah.
I will say it was funny. I was speaking to someone who is, you know, in an executive position. And She was like, some, you know, I'm hiring an executive assistant. I know that's bad. And I was like, are you sitting like, she was like, I know I hired one who's going to get back to you and schedule the meetings. And I was like, why are you apologizing for getting an executive assistant? Like, you're running a team. Like, you're running an entire team, right? Of like 1,000 people. How is that like a big ask, right? Or 1,000 stakeholders. And so it's very interesting how we have internalized this message. Mm-hmm. That, like, not even in our professional spaces are we allowed to create a budget line for someone whose job it is to do all of those things, right?
Correct.
So true. And then, of course, everybody can afford to have a whole, you know, staff of help. Everybody can afford even a cleaner. There have been so many times during my marriage where it was like, okay, we're good. I'm going to hire a cleaner. Oh, we need to pull back. Okay, I'm going to let that
cleaner. I'm going to be the cleaner. Okay.
Right, I'm going to be the cleaner. Right? No, we're going to be the cleaner.
We're going to be the cleaner. Okay.
And I understand that, but really thinking about where can you delegate? Like, can you and your friends get together and swap weekends where it's like, okay, this is my Saturday with all the kids. Bring them over here. They're going to play games. They're going to do whatever. You go have your mommy day, right? Or you've got grandparents or aunties, uncles, friends. So often we're afraid of being a burden to people that we don't ask for the things that we need. And so even if you can't afford a babysitter or to pay somebody to cook your food, listen, Cree, you just help me right there, because that's next on my list. Who can I find to drop off healthy meals for my family? But where are the spaces in our life where we're actually not making use of the people in our lives that can help us feel like we have more than those 24 hours in a day?
Yes. And it's not a bad thing. Delegation isn't a bad thing. Like you said, as your seasons change, you change with it. You decide what is important. So you may say, well, I will enjoy my house being really, really, really clean by someone else one time a month or once a quarter. You decide what that is. You set that budget and then stick with it. And then I'm sure you will find a way to make a budget to have it more often if you really enjoy it and if it's adding that much to your life.
You know, it's interesting, though. I will say that we can move on from here. But the one thing it's making me think about are the very things we're thinking of delegating are things that we feel like equate to some measure of our worth, right? So like the idea of having somebody cook for me and it be an older woman and it's like a grandma, like, oh, that's sweet. That makes it even nicer. But I'm like, wait, somebody gonna cook food for me and my family? And like, yes, in essence, when I order out, that's what's happening. Right? Like, the idea that I would pay someone to cook for the family and to like package it and like do all these things is, you know, like, I'm like, well, wait, am I less of a person because of this? Not even like less of a woman, less of like none of that stuff, just less. And the same thing with cleaning the house. I'm like, well, if I made the mess, shouldn't I be cleaning it up? And so, like, I don't want my kids thinking every mess they make, somebody else is going to clean up. So it's just an interesting, so it's like all of the internalized stuff that prevents us from the simple act of delegating and asking for help, right? And so that's what we think of.
It's so deep, Blanca. Like, we weren't even planning on talking about any of this until Dr. Green talked about delegation. I was like, oh, help me. I need help. You are so right. Like, this gets to the heart of where we put our value. People, as women, as mothers, as wives, it's like, isn't this what I'm supposed to be doing, right? Like the cooking, not that that's all I'm capable of, but like you said, Blanca, this is my family. But, you know, really, in order to delegate those things, I think it really causes us to have to re-examine and kind of recenter where our worth actually lies, even to the people that we love, right? My best that I can give to my family might not be me cooking 5-6 days a week, right? That might not be my best for them because I'm gonna be angry, resentful, you know, mad when they don't when I cook, right? Tired, all that kind of
It don't taste good.
I mean, right. I don't know.
Exactly. So, yes, thank you, Cree. Thank you for that detour, that very powerful detour that I know is going to help some people today. But really, you know, when I said, okay, who do I want to talk to about this? You came to mind about all things medical because, first of all, you are my go-to. Yes, I have doctors. Yes, I have people I go and see. But when I have a question about something, I'm texting Cree. Just like, okay, Cree, what do you think about this? Here are my numbers. Here's this. Like, what do you see? And let me tell you why I do that, because I know that Cree loves me, right? I know that she cares about me. And so much of what we see in medical news these days is about doctors who just, if I put it bluntly, don't seem to care enough to keep Black mothers alive while they're giving childbirth, to catch the diseases that are underlying and might not be so quickly visible, to do the investigating. And it's scary, right? Like not knowing whether or not you can trust your medical professional. And so I would like to very quickly, before we get into like the COVID-19 stuff and the vaccination things that I think are so important for people to hear about right now, what is your take on, you know, what we see in the news right now about medical professionals, you know, white medical professionals, to put it bluntly, who are not doing their due diligence when it comes to seeing Black and brown patients? How do we handle that?
I think a lot of it is them being so detached to how life is and the things that we've grown through. So once you get a doctor that looks like you, I know that the system, how the system is set up. I know the concerns of my patients. I know Tuskegee. I know Henrietta Lacks. I know all of those things. And it sits closer to the front of my mind than it does maybe some of my white counterparts. So I take the extra time to do the explaining. I take the extra time to listen for questions. I let my patients know this is a team thing, because if you're not going to do right, then you're just wasting my time and your time alike. So let's talk about what you are okay with doing, and let's try and meet somewhere in the in between. And then another thing is time constraints. A lot of things are driven by insurance companies. So I don't take insurance anymore. I have a cash practice. And so I find now that I am able to spend the time with the patients. I see about 10 people a day, and it has been amazing. Before, I was seeing 30 to 35 people a day. I could only spend 10 minutes with them, hours in and out. And I mean, even money was great then, but it's like, that wasn't what I was called to chase the dollar, to do all these metrics that the insurance company wants me to do. So a lot of it is time. They don't have the time to sit there and listen and pay the attention, because the insurance is going to get them, because they are not meeting this measure. They're not meeting this metrics. You got to get out. I'll see you in a month so I can charge your insurance again. So money and time is what's really driving, I think, a lot of what we have. When you spend the time, you think to ask the questions. When you ask the questions, you figure out the elephants, you know, that I call them elephants and zebras, that you may not have thought about, because I listen to you tell your story. And a lot of that is missed, because now medicine is more like a paper meal or meal, and not that relationship that we used to have back in the day when your doctor was a part of your family. You know, everybody knew doctor. For us, it was Dr. Howard. He came to your house. He, you know, took the calls. He pierced the ears. He did everything, you know, kind of thing. And so we don't have that now. Everything is run based off of time and money, which is, it changes everything.
Oh, wow, Cree. I didn't even understand that.
What happened? I mean, how do, you know, what happens? Well, what can someone who is stuck in this cycle, right? Like, what is the advocacy piece, I guess, for listeners out there, viewers, whichever one, who go in and recognize that their doctors don't, I mean, are we supposed to just, I guess, like, accept it, or like, what, is there any advocacy in it, right? Is there anything, and like, no, here's what I need from you, doctor.
Yes. So my advice, if you're going to a doctor and you know your time is very limited, one, go with your top two complaints. I have some people that come once a year, and I'm gonna tell you everything that's wrong with me, ma'am. You got 7 different things that's wrong, and we need to do good on, let's talk about these first two things. You got to come back in a couple of months, a couple of weeks, or whatever. and so we can dig deeper. So go with your first one or two biggest complaints to the doctor so that you really can drill down and get to the bottom of that. Two, go pre-write your questions. Write your questions out before you get there. Have you ever gotten to the back? I'm going to tell the doctor this. I'm going to talk about that. And then the doctor walks in and you forget everything you were supposed to say.
100%.
Everything. So write your questions down before you go. So have your couple of thoughts, have your couple of complaints, write your two or three issues down, write it down. And then as they tell you the plan, you write down what they said. And then you say back to them, okay, what I heard that you're going to do is you're going to check my thyroid. You're going to draw my blood. I'm going to pee in the cup. I'm going to think about taking these medicines and then I'm going to come back. And they can say, no, I didn't say anything about that. So that way you know that you're hearing, because oftentimes it's medical jargon. It's just, you don't even know what this hypertension and what, you know, those kind of things. So you make sure you regurgitate, okay, before you run out the door, let me make sure I heard you correctly. You're going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then I'll see you back on XYZ date. Oftentimes we leave the doctor and we don't even have a follow-up appointment. I'm like, no, you had to come back. We started a new pill. Why did you stop on the way out the door? I need to see you back. And so therefore, I think that if you look at your visit and you're organized for your visit, then you can drive the conversation, because they have the certain things that we have to get through during that visit. But if I know that you're concerned about the vaccine, or if I know that you're concerned about being a caregiver, and you bring those things to my attention, we won't forget them. We won't miss them because you thought to bring it up. So that's my advice for being your own advocate.
Mm-hmm. Great. Awesome. Thank you. You know, it's just so scary to think about all the ways in which, you know, big pharma, as people call it, insurance, influence our lives. I've had doctors who want to prescribe me something one time, you know, before, and they'll be like, oh, but let me check and see if your insurance will cover that. Like, oh, no. Okay. Let me see what else can. And I'm like, no, I want the first thing that came to your mind, right? Like, I want that thing. I don't want the substitute that my insurance is going to cover. So, wow, Kree, I did not know that about you going to a cash practice. You are teaching up in here today, girl. Those are awesome advocacy points. Okay, let's talk a little bit about COVID-19 and the vaccine that's out right now. I've got my first dose. I feel fine, no problems. I'm scheduled to get my second dose next week. But I know that there are people out there and close to us, I will say,
up in this screen, like right now,
like wink, wink, wink,
right? Yes,
like doctorates and stuff,
right? Doctors, I mean, highly educated, smart people, okay, who are just like, nah, you know, I'm not really with that. What do we need to know about this vaccine? People are saying like it happened too fast. They didn't test it on enough people. Did they test it on people who look like me? Did they test it on people who did? Like, how did this vaccine come to be? And why do you, as a doctor that we know cares about our communities, why do you recommend it?
So, good question. The vaccine, which is an mRNA vaccine, they've been studying this vaccine for years, since early 2000s, not necessarily in COVID, but they've been studying the mRNA as a way of doing vaccines for many, many years. But guess what changed this time? Now we got money, we have funding, and I'm gonna build a building and say, you just go in there and get it done. That takes a whole lot of the steps out of it when you have the funding. So now they had the funding to go in there and do what the mRNA vaccine has been used, and they've been trying it against cancer. They've been trying against working on the AIDS vaccine. They've been the Zika vaccine is made in a similar way. So they've been working on it for several years, and now it was like, okay, here's some money, here's a facility. Y'all get it done. So once you have money, money makes the world go around, no matter what we think. So now you're able to say, okay, now let's get in here and do the studies. So all of the clinical trials have to go through at least the three rounds. And they did. And then, so you have Pfizer, you have Moderna, and you now have Johnson & Johnson. So the Moderna one, I think it was like 20,000 African-American people that were involved in the study. Africans are people of color. So therefore, that's a good bit of people. When I think of studies, I think of Tuskegee. And people just saying, we're not going to participate in studies because we don't trust you. But here we go. That vaccine did actually have people of color, a lot of people of color, when you look at who usually shows up for studies. It's not us. So that's the second question. Yes, people of color were tested. And then thirdly, this is not a live vaccine. The big thing people are like, it's going to change my DNA. So how the body works is, the DNA is inside the nucleus. We're not even getting in there. This is mRNA. It's in the outside in what we call the cytoplasm. So it goes in. I'm going to send y'all an email. In the email, it's going to say directions on how to bake a cake. You're going to open that email and you're going to go through the directions so that when you get all your materials for making a cake, you know how to make that cake. That's how this vaccine works. You get the shot. It gives your body a message to say, when you see this sequence, when you see this, when you see this spike, then you fight like everything to make sure that the person doesn't get sick. So that it's telling your body to be prepared. Because before, what we were seeing was people would be at home, they'd be sick for 10 days, thinking that they beat this thing. And then on day 11, they so short of breath, because now your body's like, what is going on? We're slow to realize it because it's novel. Your body hadn't seen it before. So now we have a little message in there, just like I sent you the email. That's kind of how this vaccine is working. So the good thing is, it's not live. It's not going to give you COVID like when you get the live flu shot. You know, the flu is just a little bit of the flu. You feel really, really bad. Your arm hurts, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's why with this vaccine, side effects vary all across the board. Some people have no side effects. Some people have horrible side effects. You know, I have aching. I have my arm is going to fall off and all of this stuff. So it varies based on you and your makeup, because it's just giving you a little message to say, hey, when you see this, fight for it. The cool thing is that time has changed. We have so much technology now, and we can do things at a faster rate than we could many years ago. Before this, the quickest vaccine was the mumps. It took 4 years. to make the mumps vaccine. Usually it takes about 12 years to go through all of these steps. But when they put the rush on things as far as getting through all of the different processes, the different levels, and you have money, I think that's the game changer with this vaccination.
Yeah, I think some of the issue also is, there's been a lot of miscommunication. Like, I'm not even going to talk about Donald Trump and the stupid stuff he said. Okay, let's pretend like Trump never existed. But even like, from Biden until now, and the CDC, and now we feel like, okay, we have a CDC we can trust. We have an administration we can trust. Even now, still, there's been like a lot of mixed messaging, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Like, on the one hand, the CDC said, okay, when you are fully vaccinated, you still need to wear your mask. You still need to do this. You still need to be vigilant. And then a couple weeks ago, they came out with a statement saying, okay, people who are fully vaccinated, you are safe to be mask-free in closed environments. And so I'm like, okay, first of all, that seems dangerous, right? Because people are going to say, they're going to go to Bed Bath & Beyond or Bath & Body Works and be like, I don't have to wear my mask. You know what I'm saying? I'm vaccinated. You know, so that's a danger. But then it's just also confusing, right? So which is it? Should we still be wearing masks once we're vaccinated, or are we able to go mask-free?
So I think the big thing to understand with this is, it is ever evolving. And if we didn't have everything so recorded, like if this happened about 20 years ago, it may be okay. Everything's in print now. So now you Google and say, well, and we're fact checking. Like, this was 2 weeks ago they said this. So just imagine that now we're having more people, millions of people now have had the vaccine. So now they're able to say and put you in those controlled situations to see how you do. So what happened 2 weeks ago may not still be the right thing. So it is ever evolving, because they are doing pretty much on the job training right now. They are learning and disseminating information as we go. So my advice is, unless you know that everybody in your space that you're going to this place, your house, or you're going to visit your mom or something, and they've all been vaccinated, and it's been at least 2 weeks since your vaccine, then you should be able to be in that space. You know, you can take your mask off from there, but I wouldn't go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I wouldn't go in. I've been vaccinated for 3 months, and I still go and I have my mask on when I'm out in public. And then the newest recommendation is, if you're around people who are low risk, for COVID that you can be mask free with them. But my thing is, how do we know who's low risk?
I know.
So I just assume that if you have not been vaccinated, our family rule is if they've not been vaccinated and they're not within the 90 days of recently having COVID, then they just as high risk as anybody else. Mm. You know, so you have to use your common sense, use your God-given sense and say, okay, this makes sense, but this doesn't make sense. And understand that all of the knowledge is evolving and we're getting hot off the press. So they're looking crazy. They're looking, you know, like they're double-minded, but I think it's really just evolving and we have a record of every single thing. So we can say, you lying, you said that 2 weeks ago. And really it's a progression. It's a progression. It's a evolution because we've never dealt with this before.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I do think that there is something that is beyond what can be told about mistrust, right? It's like if you've entered a relationship in general and there's been mistrust, misuse of information, of not being treated well, there's also that, like, what you're not going to do is earn it really quickly because you threw some good words out there, right? You threw, you know, and I think there is something to be said for this idea that trust in the system is not just based on, you know, throwing some people out to the community, which is happening a lot. You know, I live in a part of Brooklyn and the local medical center, about 2 weeks ago, I got a text from a friend who said, hey, if you know of anybody who needs vaccines, they have 750 that they need to use by Wednesday.
Mm.
And it's not a Black community.
Mm.
And I'm like, people are not rushing. They don't trust there's just this mistrust of a system. And so it's just an interesting, you know, I think, you know, obviously, no stopping of the messages that, like, no, here are all of the reasons why, here are all of the steps, and also understanding that historically and systemically, obvious, I mean, you talked about Tuskegee, you talked about, like, Henrietta Lacks, you talked about all those things, but that historically, there's just been a mistrust of systems, mm-hmm. And a system that took out a community like that, that a year ago this time was taking out communities, like, that when patients were coming in, coughing, and like the same building, they were like, you didn't go to China, you could go back home, and then they're dying, right? And so I will, you know, so I think that there is something that seems so illogical and irrational that is rooted in emotion and history, right? That that goes into play for some of us, right?
So do you think, Blanca, that it's going to take time? Like, is that your message to, you know, I guess the medical community or whatever? Because there are these huge pushes. Like, I don't watch BET, but my mom is with me. And God knows she loves her some BET, okay? It's Dave, Madea, Tyler Perry, whatever.
Tyler Perry, so, always on there. There's some Madea every night on there. So
girl, every night. And my mama is single-handedly keeping them in business.
And okay.
So I walked in there, and I was cracking up really to myself at some of the commercials. They are pushing so hard to get Black people to believe in this vaccine and to get vaccinated. They have in church scenes and talk about Big Mama, save Big Mama, you know, like all this kind of stuff. Like, they're really pushing. Wow. But what I hear you saying, Blanca, is that it's not even just so much about who you put in front of us to deliver the message or the fancy nice words that you're using now. Like, this mistrust of the system was created over time, generations. And you're not going to wipe that out with some fancy commercials and messaging is what I hear you say.
I mean, I say that about every system, right? So if you were in education, I would say that. I mean, we're in education, right? Like, you don't drop your kid. I don't drop my kids off trusting an educational system to do right by my children, right? Like, there's just, and then here, there's this one marker, right? Like, this one thing that people are gauging all of their trust. Well, you must, if you don't take this, then there's something, right? Like, there's a value added to the person rather than a real look at a system, right? Mm. And so I do, I mean, like, it will take time. I'm not by no means speaking for everyone. I'm speaking in a person. I've also been very, and then we were just talking about this. We're like, I don't have anybody coming in my house. They're like, not even with a mask? Like, no, you don't need to be in my house. You're not fixing, you fixing my stove. Everybody got to leave the house first, right? Like, only one of us is going to stay here. We spray it down. So, like, you know, we have been on the more extreme end. And if anybody of my friends are listening, they're like, yeah, we know, we haven't seen you. So like, there are different pieces. Like, I think that that's a fact. I can only speak from my perspective and, like, folks who I know who haven't, you know, who haven't done it. There's also a community of people who, you know, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, so that's not that. But there are also a community of people who are like, you know, the very last thing I will do is medicine, right? So if the very last thing I'll do is medicine, then I'm just going to wait this one out until it's needed, right? And until it's needed to, like, fill out forms. But yeah, like, I'm just, so time does take, it will take time. I think there is a mistrust of the system. And that's that equally signals for us, for our community, like, why we go in, why we disrupt, why we challenge some of the thinking that's, you know, like, some of our educational spaces are also teaching, like, some practices that are, for every great doctor, there's somebody who took some of that information and misused it, right? And correct. So, you know, so I think, like, that's a further calling for our people and listeners out there. It's just like, that's why we invest in going into systems and being representation, so that we can change those practices, so that mm-hmm. we can do right by our people, right? And for those white folks who are out there listening, right, that's why you go out there, you're like, you're not listening to this just to listen to our voices, but really think about how you're advocating and disrupting some of these things that create a systemic mistrust. That manifests in individual mistrust. Like, I don't trust you. Correct. I don't trust the system. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, that's just what's at heart, you know, and it speaks to just this greater need of why Dr. Cree being Dr. Cree in the office saying, like, I'm here and I'm going to listen to you and we're going to sit mm-hmm. here and we're going to work through all of this is important.
Or even the way Cree just broke it down, right? Yeah. Like, so instead of the commercials with showing Big Mama leaving church and, you know, everybody thinking and stuff and being like, protect Big Mama, like, that feels a little patronizing, right? The way mm-hmm. that Dr. Cree just broke yeah. down, okay, let me explain to you the difference between a live vaccine and what COVID is and how we're talking about, you said mRNA or something like that.
mRNA.
Yeah, mRNA.
She talked about we sending emails. I heard that part. I'm
like, right? Like, it's like baking a cake and it's like this and this is how, like, that's what I need to know, right? Oh, you're skeptical about why it happened so fast? Let me tell you why it happened so fast. It was this and it was the money and it was this. And let me tell you what, like, talk to us like we're intelligent thinking people who can, you know, make decisions for ourselves and stop this patronizing messaging about, you know, oh, go protect Big Mama. We all love Big Mama, whatever, but I still have questions. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Mm-hmm. That brings us to our listener question. Okay. And so we are going to pivot to get some advice for this listener.
We got a letter from a listener.
Okay, so today's letter comes from Adrian in New York. And Adrian says, Dear Woke at Work, I am actually a medical professional in psychiatry that sees patients mostly virtually for now, but sometimes I do go into hospitals. My big dirty secret is that I have not gotten vaccinated. I've been offered the opportunity, but have so far turned it down. I plan to get vaccinated at some point, but really just want to wait and see how it's going to roll out and how it's affecting different people. Am I increasing the risk, or really is it okay for me to wait 6 months, even a year, to see how this thing turns out? Sincerely, Adrian, please don't tell anybody. This is my own little dirty secret. No, I added that part at the end. that was from a listener in New York. So what do you think about that, Cree? Like, is, you know, first of all, I can imagine the stigma being a doctor. I actually read an article not too long ago about medical professionals who themselves are not getting the vaccine. Okay, so Adrian, you are not alone.
You are not alone.
But But what would you say to her? Like, is it somehow like kind of malpractice? Is she increasing the risk? Or like, is it okay to kind of do a wait and see thing with
this? I think that it's okay to do a wait and see. I thought that I was going to do a wait and see in December until my entire staff got COVID and me and Zoe didn't. So once they all got sick and me and my baby were fine and Jade, my husband's high risk. So I was like, where is this shot? When are they giving it? How can I line up? So I think that it depends on, as long as it's not close to you and you're doing the things and we are staying home and you're masking, fine. But it looks totally different when it's at your door, when it's in your house, when it's in somewhere close to you. And I was like, I can't be off of work. I can't be off. I mean, we didn't work most of December because they got sick. Then we had the holidays. And so it's like, I'm supposed to be taking care of people. So you have to deal with your risk. We call it risk versus benefits. And for me, at that moment, I thought I wanted to wait to March. When it first rolled out, I was like, I'm going to wait to March or April. You know, I just, whatever. And then it hit my doorstep and it changed my whole thinking. I don't even know if I knew how the vaccine worked at that point. I was like, sign me up. It's here. It's in Alabama. I take it. Which arm? You know, that kind of thing. And so I think that it depends on if you're not seeing patients in person and you're doing all of the preventative things, then it's okay to wait and see. But just know that young, healthy people are getting this thing and being taken out just like the old high-risk person that takes 15 medications. So you never can tell how your body's going to respond, who's going to do well with it, and who's not going to do well with it. So for me, that was my issue. I'm like, I'm not really high-risk, but people around me are. So Adrian, if you're with your mom or if you have someone in your house that may be high risk, you may want to take the vaccine to not necessarily protect you, but you may want to do it to protect someone else. But it's definitely okay to wait and see. I believe everyone has the right to make their choices and to do what they feel comfortable with. But for me, the game changer was when it hit my doorstep and I said, well, thank you, Lord, we're good. But mm-hmm. I'm going to go get it done. So, you know, you have to use it based off of your history, your family. And if you're staying at home, don't let anybody make you feel bad for making the decision to wait. But if it changes quickly, if something happens to change quickly, then it's there.
Okay. Nice. Great.
Yeah,
I think that's really good advice. Okay.
See what Adrian going right back and let us know.
Well, I mean, honestly, I have to be, one, my mother. I knew my mom is here and I want to be extra careful around her. She's fighting cancer. She's on chemo. And so, you know, that played a big role in me deciding to get it when I got it, because I was also on team wait and see, especially since I'd already had COVID. I didn't feel as much of a burden to run out and get the vaccine. But when my mom came here, I was like, okay, let me go ahead and get it. Also, I just really want to travel. Like, I can't even lie. Like, the selfish part of me is just like, oh my gosh, I just want to get on a plane and use my passport to hop on some distant beach somewhere. So that was also part of my decision. So, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think we're going to get to the wow story. I don't know. I think the big thing too, and I heard you, Cree, saying, is, and this is the bigger message, my mother got her shots and she's fine. I always laugh because all my friends got their second shots. They were like, oh, I'm out for a day. And my mother was like, I don't know what's wrong with these. She's 78. She's like, what's wrong with everybody? I got up. I went. I was walking around in the streets. I was just fine. So she's like, these people are weak. They don't know how to take shots. But the one thing I will say is the big thing that I keep telling her is like, you still got to be safe, right? Like, you still got to wear your mask. You still got to do all these things. And so I think, you know, the children are still not vaccinated. Like, there's still like things out there happening. And just one thing I heard you saying is yes, choice, and yes, choice that is in safety, right? That is practicing safety, right? And so just really thinking, just making sure, like, in all of this, whether you're Adrian or whether you're someone else, even you get the shot, you get the vaccine, you don't get the vaccine, the safety piece is still essential in this.
Right? Still huge. So huge.
Okay. So wow story, right?
Yes. It's one of my favorite parts where we get to hear like all the tea, basically. Like, oh my gosh, girl, that happened to you?
Wow story. What is your wow story?
What is your wild story?
What is your wild story?
My wild story.
What is your wild story? Wild story. Wild story.
Cree, you ready to tell us this wild story?
Yes, yes, yes. So, of course, we are here and working and women at work. Guys, be mindful that everyone doesn't see you like you see yourself. So we are here. We operate in our Black girl magic all the time kind of thing, you know. So I have a lot of elderly patients. So I'm sitting there and I'm doing my good work. You know, I got my fro because, you know, everybody's wearing their fro. We're in COVID time. And I had this 90-something-year-old patient. And he's just talking to me. And all of a sudden, he stops talking and he pauses. And so I'm like, okay, what's going on, Mr., you know, talking about it. And next thing I see is his hand coming straight to my amazing afro. And before I knew it, I said, hey, we don't do that. Oh my gosh. Dr. Cree had stepped out of her Dr. Cree-ness. And I was like, why are you touching my hair? Like, we weren't even talking about hair. What did my hair have to do with this patient encounter? His little hand was in my hair and he was like, oh my goodness. He said, I just had to feel it. It looked like it felt so soft and I've been wanting to do that for a very long time. I said, let me just tell you. We don't do that. And so his daughter's sitting there and she is like petrified. She was like, I'm so sorry. He just thought that was okay. I said, well, let me just give y'all a little lesson. I was like, we don't touch each other's hair like that. I said, but if you had wanted to feel it, we could have had that conversation. So I kind of got myself back into my professional self. But y'all, my recent while at work was somebody patted my hair and patted my afro and said it felt soft.
Yeah,
no. So wow.
That is so funny.
Okay, and I'm like, he's 90, and you're like.
But no. You don't get a pass. No passes. No.
I'm 90 years in. I've been wanting to do this. I don't know if these are my last days.
No, but he also lived through the civil rights music, you know, the civil rights movement. And we're in Alabama. I'm like, you know, you have seen an afro before, sir. Like, you are wrong for that.
So he was never close enough to touch it.
Yeah, you know? that moment he was able to hold his cane with one hand and grab my hair.
No.
So this is my reason why it works. So as you ladies are out there, you know, in professions, we are so concerned about, you know, hair. Is this afro okay? Are these braids okay? Hey guys, just do it. Somebody may rub your hair and pet your head, and it may make your day, or at least may make you say, wow, can you believe that happened to me?
Okay, at the very least, it will make you say, wow. Oh my gosh, girl. Well, bless that little man.
And don't touch my hair.
But you may have sent that man to his grave happy, happy, happy. Okay, he got to check that off his bucket list, girl.
Like, come on, it's the last time.
Dr. Cree, we have had the most awesome conversation with you. Like, for real, girl. Isn't it so great when your friends are smart? When your friends are baddies, right? I mean, like, when they add to your life and can drop gems.
What would it look like to not say, isn't it so great when you ain't got no smart friends?
Right, when your friends suck.
Right? Oh my gosh. Like some friends, you know which friends you can have an intellectual conversation with and which friends are just like your buddies. Okay. It might not be one and the same, but you're lucky if they are one and the same, right? Oh, yeah. That's so great.
We're still waiting on the stories about Ray fighting out in them streets.
I'll never tell.
You got an NDA.
Yes, that's why she's still my friend. She's had so many opportunities where she could have put me on blast, but she did not. And she lived with me through some very interesting times. She is my first baby's godmother. She was one of two people who was there at my quote unquote wedding. It was a very much a shotgun wedding. I said, Cree, today's the day. The preacher's ready. We go get there. She said, I'm coming, girl. She may have even brought flowers. Okay. That's how Ronnie got my girl Cree. That's how far back we go. Okay.
Affirmations.
Okay,
Cree, we have this last part of our show where we ask our guests to leave our listeners with an affirmation. You have dropped so many gems, what they call, the young people say, free jewelry nowadays. I think that's what the young people say.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Out of touch. Yes. You're dropping free jewelry.
I didn't know that one.
Yes, no. They call it. Come on. Oh, you know what? I'm raising 18 and 21 year olds, so I kind of I keep up a little bit. So, but you have dropped so much free jewelry, so many things. But
we're making that up, by the way. Free jewelry.
Big print. But what is one affirmation that you can leave our listeners, our viewers, with on today?
Okay, today's affirmation is: know your worth, and you're worthy of living healthy, happy, and whole. That's it.
Enough said.
Listen, I know. I'm like, listen. Okay, I'm gonna go reflect on this one: healthy, happy, and whole.
Yes, you are enough. Dr. Cree.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cree. We appreciate you.
Thank y'all for having me.
Where can our listeners find you to get some more of this wisdom that you're sharing? Where can they find you?
Okay, they can find me on all social media. My handle is at Dr. DocTorKree. That's Cree with one E. And I'm everywhere. Instagram, Clubhouse, you name it. Come find me. And I'm always dropping it. Yes, honey. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can do one more social media platform. I can't do nothing else. I like TikTok.
Hold on real quick. Let me go on Google Clubhouse real quick. Those of us in our 40s are trying to catch up to dropping free jewelry. Y'all Clubhouse. Just dropping free jewelry over here. Talk about the Clubhouse. Yeah.
Girl, I don't know. Okay, but they can find you in all those places. Go follow her. This woman is dynamic. I don't just say that because she's my friend. She really is powerful, and she's doing so much. So go follow Dr. Cree. Thank you again,
thank you
girlfriend.
So much, Dr. Cree.
Thank you. Thank y'all for having me. See y'all.
Let us make time for reflections.
That was so great to just hear Dr. Cree. I'm kind of disappointed that we still didn't get some information on you. That was not the purpose of her being here. But that was really, I think there's so much, you know, often, you know, and every guest we leave, obviously she leaves us with our affirmation, but also we just reflect on some of the pieces and the free jewelry. The gems that you dropped. The gems.
Well, I feel like you're gonna be saying that all the time now.
All the time, just with you. Just with you. Because everybody be like, "Yeah, dropping free jewelry." Everybody gonna be looking on the ground like, "Wait, because I got old people who I hang out with." Okay. No, so I think I was, you know, from the opening. The delegation question, the question about like, how do you do all that you do? And I think oftentimes people might look at you on social media, think the same thing. People talk to me, like I'll get texts like, where do you have time to do all these things? And so everyone has this perception about other people. And so it's just, we find ways to make time for all of these things. And just hearing her, maybe her specific strategies doesn't work for every single person, but it is about reevaluating. I think the real thing that she said was very in the very beginning is I value my time. And so that's the piece that I think stood out with me is I value my time and I value me. And so I want to preserve the things that I love doing. And so how do folks preserve doing the things they love? I think as, people are starting to get back to whatever normal is, you know, whatever this other, I don't even call it normal. I don't know.
When on the other side of this.
Right. The year later where people are trying to figure out this, you know, slowly integrating back to some things. Just how do I preserve the time doing the things that I love, particularly during this period of reflection of like, time is really precious. And so,
right. It is.
So I think that's where she got me there, which is why I was like, can we, like, how do you
right. Oh, like, yeah.
Can we just like, talk about that?
And I do, like, we send our guests questions before so they can kind of get their mind right. That was not even a
plan. Yeah, that was not part of it.
But it was like when she said that, I think we were both like, okay, let's stick a pin in it and stay right there for a second, right? Because it was really powerful. I agree. And how do we do that guilt-free, right? Yeah. Like, how do we say, this is what my time is worth? You know, and this is how I want to spend it. These are the things that bring me joy. And if it's not cleaning, and if it's not cooking, and if it's not, you know, being an errand boy or woman, I guess I should say, for my kids constantly, and I can off put that to somebody, if it's not that. Now, for some people, it is. Yeah. They get joy out of those things. There was a period of time in my life when I did. I'm not there anymore, though. Trust me.
That maybe I'm evolving. I mean, she said healthy, happy, and whole. And so how do we, you know, how do you find that healthy, happy, wholeness? And so it's a constant, with constant works in progress. So that's where I'm left thinking about.
Well, I'm really left thinking about something that you brought into the conversation and this idea of systems, right? And when we talk about getting the vaccine and not getting the vaccine, we are talking about systemic problems and issues that didn't just start, like we said during the show, they're generations long. And I think that for me, I was probably up until this conversation oversimplifying it, you know, just be like, man, you're an educated woman, Dr. Blanca, you're an educated woman, all these other people that I'm talking to, like, you know, it's fine, it's safe, they said so, right? They said so. I mean, you know, we saw Michelle Obama get the vaccine for Pete's sake, so it must be all right, right? But just like, no, this conversation really caused me to take a step back and reflect on the fact that it's deeper than that. It's bigger than that. And our conversations around it should reflect that. And I don't think that they do right now on a national level. They're not giving it the intricacy that it deserves. Hearing Dr. Cree really break down what this, I'm like, why is it the first time I'm hearing that? I've already had the first shot. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I'm deep in.
I'm already committed. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't even understand exactly what it was they were putting into my arm and how it, and what it was and wasn't going to do. And I'm saying, let's elevate the conversation. And, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I understand there's mistrust between Black and Brown folks in the medical community because of this, because of that, but we're better now. And, you know, protect Big Mom, go get it. Like, no, let's elevate the conversation. Let's give it the complexity that it deserves. And while we're talking about COVID, let's talk about systematic racism within the medical community as a whole and how we can honestly take a look at who we are and move forward in a way that can start to build trust, because it's going to take time. Absolutely. You know, that's been done. So that's really a major thing that I'm taking away from this, that it's more complicated than I think that our current national discourse is giving it credit for.
I'm like, that is a whole other segment. We could talk about the mistrust in systems. Listen. We hope that you all have grabbed whatever, you know, these are obviously our takeaways, but we hope that you all are listening, viewing, watching, just, you know, have your nuggets. Our hope is that when we bring folks here is that they're sharing from wherever they are in the country or maybe across another country, wherever they are, that they're sharing their jewels, right? International. Well, you going to be traveling with your two shots. But wherever they are, that they're able to drop something. We try to offer just different perspectives on things. And so we just hope you gathered something that stuck for you. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.